Hello.
Russell.
Christine.
Long time no see.
I forgot what your face looked like.
I know. Except I'm lying. I saw you last night and I saw you a while ago.
That's right. Yeah, we did try to record an intro at the Queers and Beers last night at the Wheelhouse. And unfortunately, I am now at that age where I am technologically not proficient.
No, you are proficient. Yes, we were at Queers and Beers.
It was very good. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was nice to see some people out, and people brought some board games.
And there was plaid. The theme was plaid. Due to the fact that I had to get up early with my son for hockey, we had to bow out early, but people brought board games. It was cool. Wheelhouse was great, as always.
That's right.
What's new, Chicky Poo?
What's new? Not much. Just living life. Going to work sad.
You're going to work sad? I know. I was just telling Russell that I wave at him almost every morning and he just doesn't see me. He just doesn't see me at all.
Well, when I have my headphones on, I'm very just kind of tunnel visioned. So.
How was your summer?
Summer was a lot of work. Like, I didn't go anywhere. I went for a medical trip with my mom in June, and I guess that tied me over because Vancouver is not the same as it was.
Yeah, it's pricier. You don't get down there as much.
No.
Yeah, summer flew by. I was home for 3 weeks at the beginning of summer, which was really nice. It was dry.
Right.
My plants died when we went away. We just missed the Kelowna fires coming back, but it was a whirlwind.
Right. And September was a blink. I feel.
Yeah, it was a blink.
Now
we're in October and we just haven't been on the podcast waves. There's no real reason. We just.
Right. It's. But that's going to change because we do have some exciting
guests. Yeah. We have guests coming up. We have a couple of.
What's really great is to hear that people are asking about the podcast and asking to be on the podcast.
Yeah. So it's awesome. And today we have a great guest coming up. We have Jennifer Rice.
That's very exciting.
She is our North Coast MLA. So
that's right.
Excited about that. And then a few other guests
coming up as well. And October's tricking me because it's very warm lately.
I know. It was 14 degrees yesterday and it's usually crisp.
Yeah.
You know, where's the frost?
Right.
Climate change.
Kill all the mosquitoes and the bugs, please, because I've had enough.
I know. I saw a fruit fly the other day. Like, shouldn't they be dead? Yeah. They'd be gone. I asked you last night when we were fake recording, have you read any great books lately?
I'm in the midst of one book that my niece bought me. It's called Red, White, and Royal Blue. It's kind of a very lighthearted piece. I'm kind of enjoying it. And I did say there is an Amazon movie accompanying it.
Oh, yeah. I think I need to see that movie.
It's two men who find themselves and find themselves a lot.
Well, they found themselves.
Yeah, they found each other.
I read or actually listened to the Elliot Page biography, and it was really, really good. I don't really want to read right now because my master's really killed the reading out of me.
Really?
But I'm trying to get back into it. So I listened to the audiobook all summer and it was really good.
Nice.
There were a couple of times though it was a bit too graphic for me.
Uncomfortable?
But it wasn't about like sex or anything. It was just like, I don't really want to know about people's bodily functions. And there was some graphic talk about bodily functions and it does me in. You know, it's like a hair in your salad. I can't finish the salad.
Right.
I'm done.
Yeah.
But it's really good. If you haven't listened to it, it's a journey. It was really eye-opening for me, especially around understanding the journey for transgendered people.
Right.
It was good.
That's awesome. I find that my love affair with reading is definitely not the same as it was when I was a teenager. I'm definitely kind of like reading a chapter or two, putting the book down, picking up my phone, going on TikTok, putting it down again, and then picking up the book.
That's why I don't download TikTok, because I already have ADHD, and I don't think it will
go well
for me.
It doesn't help at all, and it's really like TikTok holes. If you ever hear of a TikTok hole, they're really hard to get out of. But
like a rabbit hole?
Yeah, you just fall in, and it's like Alice in Wonderland. You're in on the journey. But I'll tell you, as a cannabis user, it's fabulous sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
You definitely escape. People are so creative. I'm really blown away by how funny and dark and twisted people are.
I know. Twitter's really funny right now, too. And, like, I try to be cool like that. Like, I try to do a reel, and it just doesn't work.
Right. Okay. Okay. So, looking forward to the... Looking forward to the interview.
Okay, hello, Christine.
Hello.
Hello again. Even though we just said hello a couple of minutes ago. We're here at... Where are we, Christine?
We are at Jennifer Rice's office downtown. She is our MLA for the North Coast. And thank you for coming on today. Super excited to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate this opportunity.
Can you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Jennifer Rice. I'm the MLA for North Coast, as Christine just mentioned. So that is one of the current 87 ridings in BC. And it's a large riding in geography, but small in population. So it includes Prince Rupert, North Coast First Nations, Haida-Gwaii, all the way down the Central Coast to a little First Nations community called Wekano. That is my area of representation. Wow.
I have never heard of a community called Wekano.
Yeah.
Whereabouts is that, sorry?
It's north of Port Hardy.
Wow.
So if you looked on the map of my riding, it is actually like a sideways T. So it's kind of long and skinny.
Yeah.
Goes from, you know, just south of the Alaskan Panhandle, just north to north of Port Hardy on Vancouver Island. And then it's like a sideways T in that I have a strip of the Bella Coola Valley.
Wow.
So I have like Bella Coola, Higginsburg, and I go right into the edge of Tweedsmuir Park.
Wow.
Where I have more bear constituents than I do humans.
So yeah, like you're saying these names, like I know what you're talking about, but BC is so huge that I guess you have to know exactly these names.
Of course.
Yeah.
I think I estimated around 22 communities, but there are technically more because there's a lot of unincorporated towns and there's these really small, really remote communities that are far away. Like there's no airline or ferry that you
like
have
we
to,
think we're rural and they're really rural.
Yeah. Right. Like you really want to be there to get there. So,
sure.
Yeah, I have a big riding.
Have you ever been like, how many communities of these have you actually visited or?
I've been to all of them.
Really?
Multiple times.
Wow.
Some of them are really hard to get to that I don't get to as often as I would like to.
Sure.
I've gone on a big journey to get there and then really close to, let's say, Clem 2.
I've been to Clem 2.
And then then the fog rolls in and
I
can't get there for days and I'll...
Right.
Yeah. So that stuff, that happens a lot to me.
But the effort is there, right?
Oh.
You're trying.
Do you get a lot of feedback from the smaller communities where like, hey, where are you? Are you able to come here? Or do you hear from many or all of any of the communities? Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had it where here in Prince Rupert, in my own hometown, that I've been criticized that I spend more time in those really remote communities and not enough time in my own town.
Right.
And I certainly hear that for some of the smaller communities. But for the most part, I have made a really big effort to get out there because I believe everyone deserves representation. And I don't care if you live in a town of 50 people or 5,000 people.
Sure.
They all deserve an MLA. And so I try to be as present as possible. And of course, my home is in Prince Rupert. I've been here over 20 years. My kids are here. My wife is here. And so I actually spend quite a bit of time in Prince Rupert because it is my home. But, you know, part of the year I work in Victoria and I travel up and down a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
How do you balance this big position with a young family and travel? And, like, give us an idea. Like, how often are you traveling in the year? Like, I would imagine it's a lot.
Like, you must have a lot of air miles.
I travel a lot, and the interesting thing was that my first son was born in December of 2019, and I had basically a period of 3 months of where I wasn't required to be in Victoria, and so I was just looking forward to cherishing those precious 3 months from 0 to 3, And then COVID hit in March.
Mm-hmm.
And I amazingly had almost like 2 years at home, working from home.
Right.
And having that ability to be really close to my to my son.
Right.
And then just about 3 months ago, we had Theo. And I've just started going back to Victoria now. So it's really hard for me to say because I definitely feel like I've been spoiled with the first
the
2 years.
Right?
So how will that go? Well, I mean, I can tell you off the bat, it's already hard. And it's hard work. But I also feel that in Victoria, we need representation of every type of British Columbian. So historically, that place has been staffed with primarily older white men.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have the most diverse legislature ever in the history of British Columbia.
Right.
And part of that includes representing people with young families. So it's really hard, but I work really hard to make sure that I don't have to make a choice between family and career. And I feel part of that, part of my mission, I guess, is to actually make that place truly representative of all of British Columbia. And so if it's impossible for people with young families, if it's impossible for a rural MLA to have that, then we're actually not truly representing all of British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
So we're adapting. Our legislature is, it is definitely still stuck in the 1990s as far as corporate culture goes, but we're moving. We're doing a lot of different things to make life
more manageable.
More manageable for a lot of people. We still have a lot of work to do. I don't know, there was a controversy, if you heard not too long ago, but Melanie Mark, our only Indigenous MLA and the first First Nations cabinet minister, she quit. And therefore, we have two Indigenous people left in the legislature. There's 87 of us. So there's Ellis Ross and from Terrace, or from Kitimat Village. And then we have Adam Olson in the Green Party. And so two out of 87.
Right.
We still have a lot of work
for sure
to go. But yeah, but we actually have quite the increase in people from the rainbow, from the LGBTQ2ISA plus community.
Good job. I just usually shorten it to LGBT plus. That was good.
So we're doing, it's getting better, but we still have work to do.
Yeah.
And definitely having a young family is hard. Having a young family and living really rurally like I do, I have two challenges based on my geography and based on the fact that I'm in Victoria on Halloween and my little almost 4-year-old really wants to go trick-or-treating with mommy, right?
Yeah.
So finding ways to balance that.
I think technology, though, if the pandemic showed us, is kind of expanding that kind of challenge, or not expanding the challenge, but making it a little easier, I guess.
Definitely.
Yeah, even 14 years ago, like when I became a mom, you know, you didn't have, I don't think we had FaceTime then.
Oh my gosh.
You know,
I was going to ask you, how old is Parker? But now that
14.
You have a teenager.
I'm going to be 15 in February. But yeah, like I think, you know, my mom uses technology a lot. And for some reason, this podcast, I always mention my mom. But she calls me now on FaceTime when she's having problems like with her hearing aid and when having problems with her banking. And it's so much different because I remember when we first started FaceTiming, I just saw the ceiling, right? So I think like it brings you closer. Like if you can't be there, you can still show up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit like I feel like I'm just understanding what an MLA does and how it works in government and the legislature, like your a description almost of your job, I guess, is what I'm asking for.
So for starters, no 2 days are ever alike. And, you know, I think if people think of, you know, punching in at 9 and out at 5 and doing your work in between those hours, it's definitely not like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like ultimately at the end of the day is as an MLA, as a member of the Legislative Assembly, our job is to actually go down to Victoria where we create laws. So change laws, create new laws, adopt policies that make sense for the time that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that by bringing the voices of the people in my riding or constituency, which we just call North Coast, and all those communities in between. So making sure that their issues, that their challenges, that the things that are important to them are reflected in Victoria. So if we make a decision in Victoria and we blanket it across the province and say, this has got to work for everyone, well, if it doesn't work for my folks, my job is to go down and say, hey, we need to tweak this, we need to fix this, or we need a different law because it doesn't serve my people. So that is the part of getting around to all your communities, and that's how I learn. People call me, people email me. That's really important. But there's nothing better than FaceTime with your constituents. For example, I love door knocking at election time because there's people that will never be brave enough to call me or come to my office, which they don't need to be brave for, but they feel intimidated by that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if I see them in the street or I see them on the door, they'll tell me what's really bothering them or what they think needs to change or be different. So I learned that by going out to my communities, bring those voices to Victoria, make sure that the things that we're doing down there, like making laws, are reflective of those voices. That's kind of it in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. But like, what does a day look like? Well, it could be a day in the legislature is one thing, and everyone sees little clips of question period on the news,
right?
And that is a half an hour process of the entire day in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
It is dramatic. It is performative.
Right.
I think it's intimidating.
It's
like
very,
I would be scared to talk.
Yeah, it is intimidating. But it's because it's drama or dramatic or people are really
theatrical.
Theatrical, that's a good word. It makes for good TV. So that's what gets put on TV. But the rest of the day...
Mm-hmm.
You're like,
there's a
hey,
lot
do you
of,
want to go for lunch?
Yeah. Well, the rest of the day, we do a lot of stuff to pass laws, and they have to go through all these rules, and it's really boring. So no one really sees that part on television. So when you make a law, and you have to think of all the things, could be like 200 pages, the opposition's job, so right now the BCUP or the BC United Party, that's their job is to pick through those 200 pages and see if there's anything wrong with it. And if there's something they don't like, it's their job to represent their people and say, look, this doesn't work. Then we have a debate and we agree or not agree or disagree on that. So that's really long and boring, but it's really important and critical. So that's part of my day. And then just listening to a lot of different diverse voices, a lot of people, lobby groups, not-for-profits, organizations, big companies, associations.
A lot of networking.
Yeah, a lot of that because they all want an ear of government. So we have to make ourselves available to hear all those diverse voices.
So you're like basically never on the clock or always on the clock. Well, not never on the clock, but you're always available to be available.
Yeah, I have to say though, I've really set some firmer boundaries, particularly since I've had kids.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not healthy to have all that bleed into your life. But I do accept that I don't work 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I do accept that when I go to the grocery store, that I may run in for a liter of milk, but I might take an hour and a half to do that.
It takes me sometimes an hour to get through the grocery store just because you have like relationships with students and colleagues and sometimes I'll send my partner because I'm just like, you go in and out. Like I go in and it's like, hey, you know, and or like having a big family, like it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's
so when I come home, I try and get home every weekend. And on Fridays, Andrea will ask me. She's like, do you need to politic today? Do you need to connect with Prince Rupert constituents?
Mm.
And I'll be like, yeah, I've actually traveled a lot. Haven't been around a lot. I should probably, you know, get out there and talk to people.
Yeah.
And she'd be like, great. She's like, we'll need milk and bread and muffins. And I'll see you in 3 hours. But sometimes I come home and like, it's intense in Victoria. It is so intense. It is like early mornings to late at night.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're trying to write speeches in between. So a lot of my speeches are written at 2 o'clock in the morning. And so I come home and I'm just so spent. And all I want to do is like stay in my pajamas and check out.
Right.
And so I'll be like, I'm so bagged. I can't do it. And she'd be like, okay, well, we need milk and bread and muffins. Mm-hmm. And I'll be back in 15 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you got to balance who's doing what. Yeah.
That's amazing. How did you get into politics? How did you become who you are?
Well, I never thought I would get into politics. I don't think it's really on the list of things that kids pick about what do you want to be when you grow up.
Sure.
You know, I wanted to be all kinds of things. A pro bass fisherwoman.
Oh, wow.
You know, firefighter, all those, police officer.
Sure.
I even wanted to be a bodybuilder at one time, professional bodybuilder. I don't usually tell that to a lot of people because I remember telling that to my grade 4 teacher and her laughing and me being mortified. But
Arnold Schwarzenegger,
ripped.
I remember looking at those women who were bodybuilders and I was like, wow.
Wow.
And I could never figure out why they were tan all the time, but now I get it because it shows your muscles.
Oh.
Yeah. See?
I didn't know that.
In the summer, I'll show you. Sorry,
yeah.
Go on.
No, anyways, those are the types of things I thought about as a child. But I grew up in Ottawa, living with my mother and primarily my stepfather. My parents divorced when I was 4, and I saw my dad on weekends, my biological father. And my stepfather was a progressive conservative, even was part of the Reform Party at one time. And my mom was always a feminist New Democrat. And so they fought about politics at the table. And I think that might have just been off-putting for me.
Sure.
And I wasn't really, I think I was always civic-minded and socially-minded, environmentally-minded as a kid. Definitely environmentally-minded, but to step into politics was definitely not on the agenda for me. And then it wasn't until I moved to British Columbia. And if you live in BC, you can't help but be involved in politics. And I happened to be the tenant of my predecessor, Gary Coons, who was the MLA at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me a lot of stuff. And I would ask these really naive questions about, if all the science in the world says this is wrong for the environment, why do we keep doing it? And he would pat me on the head and say, now, Jennifer, that's not how politics works. And so I was so frustrated that, you know, people were making decisions not based on facts or not based on science.
Right.
And so it really just stirred me up and motivated me because I just wanted to see justice. I just wanted to see fair government, representing individuals and communities and people. My focus was people and why we would harm people to support perhaps a major polluting industry. I mean, that's just one example.
Right.
So it really opened my eyes and was inspiring. And I ran for city council and I was only a year and a half in where people were encouraging me to run provincially because Gary Coons was going to retire. But I never took it seriously because he loved his job as MLA. I never believed he would retire because he seemed to just love it, but he did. And so, you know, that's it kind of in a nutshell with a whole other little side stories that require bottles of wine to get through.
Coach Gary! How do you handle the pressure, like, especially right now with anti-Soji? I got a little bit of heat during the last protest just with people asking me, you know, what are you teaching kids and are you really doing this? And there was a lot of ugliness, I think. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm sure with every announcement decision, there's Facebook feedback and trolls and people who are saying things. Like, how do you manage it? Like, how do you tackle it?
Well, I mean, admittedly, for my first 2 years in government, but as the MLA, we were initially in opposition, so we had the minority number of elected representatives. So I cried every day for 2013 and 14.
Wow.
You know, not just from trolls and pressure, but just from the pressure of the work, plus all of a sudden
there's no balance.
There's
they throw you, I think.
Yeah.
You get thrown into it and then no one gives you a schedule and says you're off.
Well, it was like
this time.
It was like learning by fire hose those first 2 years. And I was younger. I don't know if I was as young. But I had a lot to learn, and there was a lot of pressure. But just the the way people feel that it's acceptable to talk to their politicians blew me away, because I put my pants on one leg at a time, just like you, just like anyone else. Mm-hmm. I'm just a person doing the best that I can. I'm not perfect, but politicians are held to such a standard of of perfection. And so that was really hard initially. I feel, you know, it's definitely a different situation now. It's way more manageable. But I would be lying if I said none of those hurtful things didn't affect me, because they do affect me. They do affect me. And I just have better coping skills of getting through it. As far as like the rhetoric around anti-SOGI and just the rise in transphobia and it becoming political fodder, we now have another party in our BC legislature, the BC Conservatives. They have two MLAs, and they bring that up in question period. And that's sort of, that's their wedge point that they want to make with the rest of the parties, is they want to talk about that. And there's so much misinformation that just gets...
That's the part that blew me away. And, like, I want to speak for Russell, but, I mean, during that time when... Or, you know, it was a month ago where just people are making comments. And, like, I was asked at one point, you know, are you really teaching kindergartners about anal sex? Like, it's just been so... The SOGI curriculum has been blown out of the water. Like, that's not what we're doing. But I also, like, for the first time ever in Canada and BC, I felt not safe. And I don't know, maybe I was overthinking it, watching too much stuff, but there was also, like, posters being put up around town, just the total hate, the total gross misinformation. And I think you and I, without even speaking to each other, like, we were talking, but I took a mental break. Like, I was like, I'm off of social media for a couple of days. I've never had to do that. I've never had to say, I can't look at just, you know, my friends or social media and stuff, because I was just gutted. Like, this, I put a lot of work into the Gay Straight Alliance and RuPats, and I know you are doing a lot of work. So is Russell. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, that's all I can think of saying is, like, we're human beings, you know, it was hard. And then to think another protest is coming up.
Yeah, I find it really heart-wrenching. I really feel for young people growing up right now and seeing all this surrounding them. And I, you know, I have to say, I was never closeted. Everyone knows I'm gay. I've been gay since I knew, probably as a young teenager. I'm going to say between 14 and 17.
Can we get a date?
Between 14 and 17, I think I was coming to resolution with that. By 17, I had a girlfriend. And I, you know, I don't actually feel like I would be someone that would wear the pride flag and charge down McBride Street.
Yeah.
And I feel, particularly as a representative of this riding, where the people like us on the rainbow are fewer compared to, let's say, the West End of Vancouver, where the MLA there, Spencer Chandra Herbert, he better be wearing that pride flag marching down Davie Street, because that's his electorate. So I've always been grateful for people like Spencer, people like you that are doing this really important work. I'm really, like, I'm just getting all choky whatever for the Gay Straight Alliance and all that work that you're doing, Christine. But I just been grateful that others have done the advocacy and that I didn't have to, because I didn't feel I had to. I felt like, if I talk about that issue here, people will say I'm a one agenda person, that I don't care about jobs and the economy, that I don't care about public education or healthcare. And so it is, you know, maybe that was a little internalized homophobia. I don't know.
Sure.
I'll talk to a counselor about it someday. I'm not really sure. But I also felt safe. I also felt like, I feel really comfortable being a gay girl walking around town, and most people here don't care. And, like, I've had a few, you know, I've had hate mail and whatnot, but, like, the majority of the complaints about me don't have to do with my sexuality.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I feel really lucky.
Yeah. Right.
I feel really...
Oh, my gosh. I had a word there, but it just escaped me. just to your professionalism and to your actual dealing with your day to day.
Yeah.
Like it's not like you walk in with your flag. It's just part of you.
Right? Yeah.
It is. And honestly, there's times where I forget that I'm gay because then I realize when someone doesn't know and they find out and they might have like a jolted response.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, I go, oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just used to
being... No, there's times where I do too.
Like, I'm just used to being a gay girl. Yeah, I just live my life. I do my thing. Yeah. And then I realize when I say, oh, my wife, I refer to my wife in passing and I don't even know that I just said my wife.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then they might jolt and I'm like, right. I'm not exactly the majority. And so then it reminds me. But I feel really fortunate that I get to live like that. Not a lot of people do, particularly trans people and people in different parts of the world. So all this resurrection of trans and homophobia lately has definitely motivated me to use my voice, to use my position.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, I just feel like that would be a real waste to not.
Well, we just saw your sticker on your door, which I think is really, really amazing.
It's beautiful.
Safe space.
Yeah.
With your name and just, you know, showing that this is a safe space. And it's good, especially for younger people now whose skin is not as thick as ours or, you know.
Well,
and
I think it all takes time, too. Like, my confidence is totally different now that I'm going to be turning 50.
so am I.
But it's just like, you feel more secure and stuff like that. And I remember when we first started talking about safe spaces or safe places, and I was like, why does it have to be safe? You know, everyone's safe. This is stupid. But now, 12 years later, I get it. And like, there's times when I'm in other countries and I don't feel safe.
Right.
Like, I just explained to my brother and my sister-in-law how, you know, we go down to Phoenix sometimes, and the last time we were there, we didn't feel as safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a very visibly African-American son, and we're gay, and the world has changed, and Trump, and blah, 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 and it's trickling up here, some of the things, but it blew my sister-in-law away. She was like, I never thought of that. And I said, I would really like to go to Florida. Florida has a travel ban for LGBT people right now.
Oh, my gosh.
So
I didn't even know that.
Yes.
I should have known that.
So, but there's certain parts, right? And now I feel like that is happening where, we have to justify why we're here. And
it's almost like a cycle. Like, I mean, when, like, in the 90s.
Like a bad mixtape.
Yeah. Yeah, like the 80s and 90s, it brought this kind of thing, but more towards, you know, HIV and AIDS.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it makes, I feel for people differently. Like, that's a great example. Like, I look at the AIDS movement and stuff and how hard that must have been. And then now I feel like, oh, my God.
Because they went through that, we're able to kind of, like, pick that up and continue on or...
Yeah.
Well, it's been... You know, it's awful. It's tragic. But it's also been a really good reminder to not be complacent, to not get too comfortable, that we have more work to do. And, you know, if I could just tell a short story about when I came out and I came out to my mother, I feel like I have the best coming out story because it didn't even make her blink. whereas a lot of my friends have had horror stories on the reaction.
And what year would have that been? Like 1990?
In the 90s.
Yeah.
In the 90s. And after, you know, she's like, yeah, we know. I'm like, you do?
What?
Why didn't you tell me? I didn't know. Anyways, it was really funny. But she asked me, she said, well, are you going to go to the gay pride now? And I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to gay pride. And she's like, why not? I'm like, well, there's no straight pride. Why would I go to gay pride? And she sat me down and she looked me in the eyes and she said, Jennifer, the day that you or any kid doesn't have to come out of the closet as anything is the day you can not go to gay pride. Until that day, you better march your ass down there, and I want to see you in the gay pride parade because you still have to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a hard thing for you, and it shouldn't be. And I was like, oh, wow, right. Thanks, Mom.
Right.
And that, you know, I realized that comment about there's no straight pride parade is like something that a lot of straight people say and is almost homophobic, but you know, that was part of my growth and my learning, and I agree with her.
It's like the visibility, the accessibility of seeing LGBT
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? For other people to say, oh, it is safe.
Mm-hmm.
To be myself, to live in my skin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which
and
is,
you're welcome here. Like, I think that's big for young
Absolutely.
People. And
yeah.
A teacher sent me a nice little message saying, you know, I have a new student. That student came into the building. They saw the Pride stickers. They saw the Safe Place stickers. And they felt welcome here. And she's like, and that's big. And I was like, aw. Like,
yeah.
you know, it's working.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
Yeah, and
still so much work to do, but it's
mm-hmm.
so good to actually have that that kind of realization.
I agree, though, Russell, with the cyclical thing. That does seem how it is.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I don't remember actually having to defend my existence so much as
right.
I have lately, or
mm-hmm.
to just deal with really disproportionate perceptions, particularly around Soji. Like, people have written me and they said
mm-hmm.
something along the lines that you said teaching kindergartens around about anal sex, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not in the curriculum.
We're not doing that. I know, and I like copied and pasted the curriculum because some people felt safe enough to message me with their questions, which I think is really great, because you know, there's no wrong question. Like, ask the question if you need to know more, and
conversation dialogue.
Yeah, but the not understanding that we have a curriculum to follow and that we're not sitting kids down and going, okay, gay story time now.
Yeah.
It's
right.
time for this now. It's
right.
like, we're not doing that. It's
mm-hmm.
meant as a support tool.
But it just seems like it's the following the playbook that the United States and what they're
mm-hmm.
going through
mm-hmm.
is
even the racism.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like whoever they are, who are being like very dramatic, theatrical, kind of like so unbelievable that you have to believe it. Do you
right.
know what I mean? Where
yeah.
where it's like I read something in a Northern View where they interviewed someone who was like, we just want kids to be kids and, you know, learn about flowers.
Mm,
like,
but they are.
Yeah.
In the flower unit.
Yeah.
Around spring.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where I don't know. It's frustrating to think that there's so much misinformation out there and people
mm-hmm.
are just gobbling it up and just being like, no, this is real. I
mm-hmm.
saw it
well,
on
it's
the
Facebook
internet.
Truth, right? And
yeah.
it's like the 3 or 5, 10-second TikToks where
yeah.
there's a little splurb of something.
Yeah.
And then it's like you have to remember that you have to seek
right.
the information
mm-hmm.
and make sure that it's real, right?
Confirm it.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
It's hard, though. People are like, well, how do I confirm it, right? But
also, how do you deal with that when someone comes up to you with something like so crazy? Well, I mean, maybe I shouldn't say that. Something so unbelievably
untrue,
large story where they believe it to be true. How do you approach that to just kind of humanize it, I guess?
Well, first of all, I welcome anyone in this office. So
sure.
if you're homophobic, you're still welcome here.
Yeah.
If you act out and yell at my staff or become abusive, I don't care who you are, you're not welcome. But you know, I certainly welcome all kinds of perspectives that I don't even agree with, and I'm open to listening and learning. But if there are blatant mistruths, then, and I know the truth,
right.
or I have a different perspective that I think is closer to reality, I don't shy away from offering that.
Right.
But I can't, you know, invest in a one person to
right.
try and convince them to see the world differently or to see my perspective. I'll
right.
offer what
mm-hmm.
I can, but there are certain people that if they come, like the people that are emailing you, Christine,
mm-hmm.
with like legitimate concerns and questions, like that is welcome because they're eager
yeah.
to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you come in and, for example, I have this email, really long email from someone who just told me all these facts and they're so outrageous. Like and then it's like, so what do you think about that, MLA Rice? And I'm like,
oh my God.
How much energy do I put into like,
there's a bit of letting go.
Correcting
and,
all
yeah.
of that.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
I realize I can't actually put a lot of energy into that. A,
yeah.
I cannot keep up with my inbox
yeah.
anyways. I'm doing my best to try and respond to all my constituents first. But that person is so set in their mind that I just have to sort of let it let it go.
Right.
And if they need to vent by email and send it to my inbox, then
sure.
so be it for them. But yeah. it will go to R for recycling in
right.
my mind.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to say G for garbage, but maybe I'll be a little bit kinder and say R for recycling.
Is more appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. File G or file R, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you find the public does respect your boundaries in terms of, you know, balancing being an MLA professional and your family?
I would say yes and no.
Yeah.
I think the fact that I have always tried hard, and I've been doing this job for a decade now, to make myself available. And if I'm eating dinner at the Crest and you come and bring a query to me, if I'm by myself, no problem. But if I'm with someone, I might give you 5 minutes and say,
mm-hmm.
here's my card, call me back, make
right.
an appointment,
mm-hmm.
email me this concern. And, you know, I think because of that, people are just used to me having very soft boundaries. But now that I have children, I'm a little bit firmer, and not everyone likes that.
Right.
And so it is a balancing act.
Unapologetic.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm in the grocery store and my toddler is pulling at my shirt going, mummy, 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 and someone keeps talking, and then my kid starts to break down and have a tantrum on the floor, they are not really getting the boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I just have to be firmer and extract myself from that situation. But I also want to say people are really phenomenal in respecting my boundaries. And
that's good.
Sometimes I actually feel bad because they're so afraid to
approach
me, because they're like, I know you're so busy. You're always busy, and now you have kids. It's like, no, my job is to serve you. I'm still here for you.
Mm-hmm.
I just might have a little bit more of a structured framework. So if I'm with my kids, I don't mind a short, quick 30-second, but if you're going to go into depth about a major issue, I do take issue.
Deep dive.
I take issue with that. And, you know, part of that is just teaching other people, because normally I would be open to that. But
right, for sure.
I'm a mama bear with kids.
It changes.
I get it.
Yeah,
I get it now.
Do you feel, what do you think the difference is, or I don't know if I'm going to say this right, when you're in like question period, or when you're around that many politicians, what is more intimidating, there or you with your constituents?
That's a good question.
That is a really good question, Russell.
I like just
it.
Visually pictured something.
Do you know who intimidates me the most?
Who?
Sometimes kids.
Really?
Like
teenagers.
Oh, teenagers.
Oh,
yeah.
Right? I love them. I embrace them. So, you know, my office being almost next door to Pacific Coast School, I love it. And I love it when they come in here and sell me all kinds of chocolates and other things that I don't need to eat, but I'm supporting a fundraiser. And we have these great conversations. And
they're so current.
They are so current. And so, when I refer to my wife, they don't blink. They don't care.
Right.
They're used to having... But if I was... you know, a teenager at that age, if someone said, you know, my wife, another woman had said my wife, we'd be like, oh!
Yeah, avert your eyes.
Oh! Right? They're just whatever.
Yeah.
So that doesn't intimidate, but when I go to a classroom, they do not hold back.
Right.
They do not hold back on their questions, and they're blunt.
Mm-hmm.
So the bluntness sometimes it's jarring for me,
mm-hmm.
But sometimes it can be a bit intimidating.
Right.
So it's a bittersweet thing, because I love it and I embrace it, but I'm like, oh my gosh, how you frame that? You know, older adults usually are a little more careful in their language, to be a little more selective.
Sure.
But here or there, I don't know.
I guess it's just different entities, different beasts.
Different energies.
Yeah.
I feel like I have a tremendous amount, way more confidence than I did a decade ago in both realms.
Right.
I actually feel like in my career, the best years have been the last few years as far as being able to deliver for my constituents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in part, that has to do with the fact that we are now in government and not in opposition, so we can actually,
right.
Mobilize change a lot quicker than when you're in opposition. But I've learned a lot. I learned, mm-hmm. how to navigate different situations. And I don't want to be all boastful and whatnot, but I think particularly in the last few years, I've been able to deliver a lot for Prince Rupert. The $65 million grant to replace the water pipes, for example,
right.
mm-hmm. I've been working forever. It's taken a long time on replacing Prince Rupert Middle School. Those are just a couple of things.
And I think a lot of people don't really see that or
don't
hear
see
about
what
the process.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of talking, right?
Yeah.
And so
negotiating.
In the early days, I was criticized that I didn't communicate enough. And so I worked hard at upping my social media game and putting
sure.
stuff on. And then I've been criticized, well, you put stuff on Facebook all the time. You're always
right.
taking photo ops. And so I'm like, wow, I can't win with that
right.
one. But I have learned that I need to do that. It's a necessary thing because there's so much background work that is really not photo op-able,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But I need to actually communicate to say that I'm still working on this. Like, I'm still working. We've been working on the pipes issue for a while. We haven't
yeah.
we haven't forgotten. And being able to secure that $65 million grant,
mm-hmm.
you know, some people don't even know what that means. Like, some people say, I don't know what $65,000 looks like. What's $65 million?
Mm.
But the biggest grant Prince Rupert ever received was in 2019, I believe, which was $8 million that my government delivered. And that was like a huge deal. People were just like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have $65 million, my urban colleagues are like, how the heck did you pull that off, Jen? What
mm-hmm.
the, WTF?
Yeah.
I feel really proud of that because
mm-hmm.
it took a lot of...
It's a lot of money.
It took a lot of
mm.
talking. I had to tell the Rupert story so many times to so many different people. And I know people are so disgruntled right now with the state of the roads and the
mm-hmm.
being all ripped up and whatnot. But we needed the feds to match that. And the feds had put this restriction on the city saying, if you start the work before you get our money, you're not getting any of the money. Why that is, I don't understand fully,
mm-hmm.
but that's it really crassly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so not that I'm here to defend the city's choices. I'm not a city representative anymore, but I know the city is just chomping at the bit to get all that stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
They have our money. They have the $65 million in the bank. That is contingent on them getting the federal money. So they can't spend the money we've already given them yet until they secure that federal money, which I do believe is going to happen soon.
Wow.
And then once that's done, then the city can do its work. So a lot of people have been complaining about, like, why aren't you spending money on the water? Well, I am.
Yeah.
And I advocated really hard and long for that. And to get a town of this size, 12,000 people, get a $65 million grant is unheard of.
Mm.
But David Eby specifically helped me champion this. He was like, we cannot shut that town down. We don't want to see it fail. We can't see
right.
it collapse. And I feel really fortunate that I have a premier that actually understands the importance of Prince Rupert
mm-hmm.
and cares about Prince Rupert.
Especially when you hear stuff like after the fact. Like, I think Maripon said that Prince Rupert was on the brink of evacuation
yeah.
last year
yeah.
because of the water supply.
Yeah, well, that I don't know if you remember last Christmas. That
I like missed that. I like.
We had like 4 years of water.
Yeah. Okay.
Like when the
mm-hmm.
boil advisories
yeah.
come out, I'm just like, hmm.
Yeah, it's like, oh, another one?
Yeah.
It must be Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, this Christmas, so a lot of people were away.
I was here. I don't know
what
I was
here?
Doing.
Oh, well, it was so cold. We had that
oh,
really
right,
unusual
right, yeah.
cold
right.
snap.
Well, we've
yeah.
had two very dry winters.
Yes.
Like where snow has stayed around a long time. Ice.
Mm.
Yeah.
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 And then we had like, was it April or May? We had summer.
Right.
And then, yeah, it was April. Then May was like winter again.
Mm-hmm.
And, just having mild temperatures typically and historically in Prince Rupert a lot of homes are not constructed. There's people that have exposed water pipes and then they're freezing and whatnot. And our infrastructure to the homes is really aged. And all that freezing and thawing was, you know, nearly catastrophic. So, yeah, it is really, really critical. But I feel like we're this close. I'm doing the one inch mark here with my fingers.
I am verifying she's doing
the one inch mark. That, you know, the federal government will come to the table and we'll be able to get this. And the thing that you're going to hear from people in Rupert is like, not when are you going to fix that road? Is like, why are you fixing so many roads? Why are there? Because the city's plan is really aggressive. They want to get a lot of it done. But the great thing is, it's a replacement project. It's not a patchwork project. Right? We've been patching all these Band-Aids. Everyone talks to me about McBride. Why does it get ripped up every year? Well, with the very controversial roundabout that I just announced this week, part of that includes replacing all the water and sewer under there. And that is municipal responsibility. It is not my government's responsibility. And people are freaking out about the cost of the roundabout. The cost is so high because we're going to do that for the city.
That's an important part.
I failed to communicate that. You know, I failed to communicate that in a manner that people understood.
Right.
And that is a lot of money. But once it's done, we're not going to rip up McBride for a very long time. It will be...
Touching wood.
It should be the last time that happens.
So McBride... Everything on McBride is the province, like...
So the highway
We're
responsible for the surface.
Yeah.
Any of the infrastructure subsurface is all...
Got it.
So, like, I could go and fix our part of the road right now, but when the city needs to go replace the water and sewer, they will dig up our paid-for road, fix that, and then they have to pay for the paving all over again.
Right.
So if we all do it together, like this is why working together with multiple layers, levels of government is so important. We're going to do it all at the same time. So it's one interruption to Prince Rupert residents. It's done for good. And I don't say for good, but it's done for a long time. Like we don't have to.
Not every year.
We don't have to keep going back. And then at the end, we serve Prince Rupert residents better.
See, like if someone came out to sell it that way, you wouldn't have, like, everyone saying, about the roads?
But that's a perfect example of not all the information's out right now, or it wasn't communicated in a way that people understood it.
Or people don't understand the levels of government.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think I finally understand the levels of government. And, so it's about informing yourself and taking the time.
Just like cutting through that red tape from municipal, provincial, federal.
So like the municipal roads that have all the potholes in them is totally not my jurisdiction. It's not the provincial government's jurisdiction.
Yeah. But can you fix it?
I can't, but what I try and do is I find grants to help the city so that they can pay for it and fix it. You know, it might...
I try
and do that.
It's a big problem, right?
It's a huge problem. Yeah. There's so much to be fixed in this town. The city, with 12,000 people, can't do it alone. And so that has been my job lately, is like, how can I help? And that $65 million is like unprecedented because we are tapping into things that are not our responsibility and not our jurisdiction. And
it's not typical. But you're all working together.
We're working together.
Which is the key point.
The key point. The thing with the roundabout, everyone's like, $18 million. Well, it's not an $18 million roundabout.
Yeah.
It is the pipes and the sewer and the corner lot. I know it looks like a level lot when you drive by, but it's actually on top of a building. So part of that money for the roundabout is demolishing that decrepit building, which is crumbling and falling.
Which is a decrepit building?
So that's the thing. It looks like a level lot, but if you drive down, there's a building that's holding up the lot.
Where the old car dealership
is. Right.
Back in the day. Back in the 1980s.
Where Dairy Queen was, and then that car dealership.
And that's the thing, like people don't get all the collab that's happening. That's how an influencer would say it, right?
The Dairy Queen is on the other corner, though. Like that.
RCMP.
But that's all, like, all of that's getting done pretty much really close together. Or I don't want to say simultaneously, but close together. And so, like, those lots, second and third at McBride, people complain all the time mm-hmm. about how unsightly it is. When you first drive into town, when you mm-hmm. that's what you look at. So again, not our responsibility as a provincial mm-hmm. government, but we're going to take care of that building. And we're going to fill it in, and we're going to make it even. And the part of the lot that we had to buy to do mm-hmm. the roundabout, we've talked to BC Housing and said, get us some affordable housing on here. Mm-hmm. So like that money is going to do a lot of different things. It's not a very...
It's a stepping stone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's broad, and it doesn't include just our responsibility. So when people are saying to me, $18 million?
Yeah.
I get it. That is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But none of that is coming out of Prince Rupert taxpayers' money. It's coming mm-hmm. out of...
And that's where people get
yeah.
riled
so,
up.
And if we didn't, if I didn't get the money for those water and sewer lines,
mm.
the city, it has to be done. The city has to find the money for that.
Wow.
So the option is Prince Rupert taxpayers get their taxes
yeah.
jacked up even more than to do that. So I just want people to have a little bit more of a context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I appreciate
you know,
that.
And people think it's a waste of time. I'm not an engineer. The Ministry of Transportation.
Why are you an engineer?
Yeah.
it's based on a study from 2016.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
It's a non-compliant intersection.
There's so many levels that I don't even know about where you're explaining so much, and I'm like, oh.
I just realized. Sorry to interrupt because I do that all the time. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Can I talk? I just realized in the last couple of years, because I couldn't figure out, you know, we have this port and why are roads so rough, but then it's because there's a federal agreement, right, with the port. Doesn't have to pay the city taxes? Like, am I right on that? Or is that Facebook information?
You're on the right track.
Thank you.
I have to say,
positive.
Part of that is my government's responsibility, so I will own that.
Okay.
But
so I can be mad at you.
You can be mad at me.
No, I'm just kidding.
You can be mad at me.
I'm kidding.
It's what, you know, how that, and like, I don't want to get into all the tax stuff.
No.
Yeah,
people,
yeah.
You'll lose us too.
You'll lose you,
yeah.
right? I'll
yeah.
lose you. But in a nutshell, ports are different entities. They're kind of like airports. So they get treated differently. They don't have to follow the same rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's federal, right?
Well, that is a federal port. But yes. So this is not me bashing the port. Like, the port is...
I'm not either.
Critical point. And has nothing to do, really. They pay taxes in lieu. Like, they don't pay taxes like you do as a citizen, but they compensate in a different way. The rate that they compensate is the sort of the controversial part in the town.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a very...
Not paying enough, as some people might think?
Correct.
Okay.
That is the sentiment around
it.
And that's why we have Rushbrook Trail...
So
the,
yeah.
I can't think of the name of
the
it.
Marsh?
The marsh.
Salt marsh.
Salt marsh.
So the salt marsh was a compensation project. So basically, when you damage fish habitat, if you have to and there's no way of you not damaging it, DFO, the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, you have to compensate and create new habitat elsewhere. And so that was one of those projects for somewhere that the port had damaged fish habitat. They had to compensate that. So
that's
So
you just have a big...
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah.
Yes. So do we benefit as a community? Absolutely. I mean, I love that little walkway, and I took my kid there yesterday.
Yeah.
So yeah, and they, you know, and I don't want to sound like, I don't want to beat
up. It just sounds
It's
so
really complicated. I could do a whole podcast on
that.
I know.
Yeah.
We're going to have to come back for a part two.
It's so ridiculous how
yeah.
they come across as like this kind of community savior when really they're just kind of doing their due diligence.
Doing their due diligence.
To compensate for
building
right. like
I
the
see.
Salt Marsh.
Right.
Marsh,
mm-hmm.
sorry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where they say, oh yeah, we're going to provide this, when really, you know what I mean? Like,
they had to do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
yeah.
So it's just smoke and mirrors and...
Well, those are all your words, Russell.
Yes, those are all my words.
Those are your words.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But again, it's like
the
challenge.
The levels of... You can definitely go down a hole here.
Yeah, and I think the challenge for how we all get busy in our lives and you hear a snippet of this, a snippet of that, I have to dig deeper,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yes.
And
who has time for that? That's
right.
That's what
yeah.
I really, we're so
I needed
busy.
Cole's notes. Like, you know how you used to cheat with Shakespeare and,
yeah.
and you would get
yeah,
that
yeah,
little,
yeah.
well, notes. That's what they're
that's
saying.
Yeah, yeah. The little
you know?
Aspect
that's what
when
I
you
need.
Go to the bottom of the
that's
page.
That's what
like,
I need.
I would never have passed Shakespeare units without the Cole's notes.
Right.
But eventually, actually, I learned to really love it.
Is it Cole's notes or Cliff's notes?
I don't know. But
oh,
we were in English Lit together.
Yeah.
Remember when I didn't understand what Ode to a Grecian Urn was about?
No.
It was in our Lit book, and we all loved Miss Kuvalon.
Yeah.
Hey, Miss Kuvalon. and I was just like, not on the same page.
Right.
So anyways, we're going another place. But I am very thankful
yes,
for you coming on and just touching on some of these current issues. Especially the roundabout.
Yeah.
especially
totally
anti-Soji.
Yeah. I have one question, though. Like,
yeah, I'm not
question.
Even wrapping it
okay,
up.
Okay.
I'm just, like, being appreciative.
Sure.
How do you see the difference in leadership from the municipal level working with them? So before it was, like, under Lee.
Right.
And now it's under Mayor Pond. Do you find that there's a vast difference, a big difference, or is it more approachable or?
Well, I mean, a lot of the councillors are the same from the
sure.
previous councils.
Yeah.
I have enjoyed working with all councils.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, though, that Herb and I have been getting along like a house on fire. And a lot of people don't believe me or don't believe him when we actually say that because Herb was the 2017
oh.
BC Liberal candidate, and so he ran against, or we ran against each other
right.
to become the MLA.
And now
right.
you're collabing.
And now we
which
are,
is the word
you know, and that's the whole thing, is like you see the partisanship. I mean, it's there, it's real. I struggle with it. Like, at the end of the day, I just want to get things done for people,
yeah.
and so does Herb.
Right.
And so that's our relationship, is
right.
like...
So it's just putting your view of
how to get there
yeah.
is different.
Yes.
But I think actually right now we're really aligned and
yeah.
you know, he's come a long way. In fact, he donated to my campaign recently, and he
oh,
did that
wow.
in a public way.
Right.
And I'm really grateful for it. So I think it just demonstrates how A, people can change. We're not
mm-hmm. we're not stagnant.
We're not stagnant.
Right.
And B, regardless of that, like, I really appreciated that. I appreciated particularly because he made a public
gesture,
and he didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to do that at all. But I feel like we're actually getting a lot of things done together.
Right.
And yeah, like
that's
sometimes
awesome.
We have to detach from each other. Like,
right.
I don't agree with all the city's decisions, and he doesn't agree with
mm-hmm.
all of mine.
We're never gonna. You're never
or
gonna
my
please
governments.
Everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But the end of the day, the goal is to make life better for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we share that value.
Hmm.
I have one last question.
Sure.
Okay.
What would your advice be to a young person entering into politics and this life? What would you say?
Oh. So, something I find that I say a lot to people is that this job as a member of the Legislative Assembly is a representative job. So you don't have to have a PhD. You don't even have to have a degree. We have had MLAs that are high school dropouts. And so people will always say, I need a poli-sci degree, or people that I've hired.
Mm.
I had an interview for an assistant a few years back, and I had one applicant who had a degree in poli-sci, and the other applicant was a bartender.
Mm.
At the end of the day, I chose the bartender because a bartender
listens.
Can
mm.
listen,
yeah.
can talk to anybody, people they agree with, people they don't agree
mm-hmm.
with.
Right.
And those kind of skills are really hard to teach someone.
Mm.
Political science skills, I can teach you that.
More
you can learn as you go.
Yeah.
But if you're not able to
navigate
dealing with people,
someone coming at you.
Yeah, I that's harder for me to teach, especially because I have to travel so much. I'm not here to sort of micromanage. I have to rely on trust with my staff.
Mm-hmm.
So that is most important to me. So all that to say, you know, having the interest, having the passion, willingness to learn, those are the kind of the assets that I think you need to get into this.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, having a poli-sci degree is beneficial, but it's not the end-all be-all.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that, you know, it's a job for everyone. It is a job for gay people. It is a job for single moms. It is a job for Indigenous. It's anyone, whoever is here in British Columbia, you have every right to do that work, whether you're educated or not educated, you know, young, old, whatever. It's it's for everyone.
That's great.
Yeah. A lot of people like they feel intimidated by me, but like I said earlier, my pants go on one leg at a time, just like everyone else. Yeah. So you don't have to make yourself super, super special. Right? You don't have to, you can, if you show up as you are and people vote for you, that is awesome.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome.
Yeah. That's good advice. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. What a great conversation.
This is long overdue and I think we might have to do a part two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a lot.
I'd be open to that. That'd be fun. This has been fun for me too. Thank you.
Awesome.
Yay.
Yay.
Okay, thank you so much.
That was awesome. And I did not get done.